This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Tom Fucoloro, founder and editor of the Seattle Bike Blog. In 2014, Seattle Neighborhood Greenways awarded Tom the 2014 Greenways Champion Award as the individual who has most advanced the cause of safe streets in Seattle. He was also featured in Seattle Met as a 2014 game changer, one of 15 people who will spend 2015 addressing the biggest challenges facing Seattle. Tom Fucoloro is here to tell us about Seattle's new stationless bike share systems and to evaluate the current status and future of bicycle infrastructure in Seattle. Welcome, Tom.
Thank you for having me.
Would you like to begin by saying a few words about the Seattle Bike Blog?
Yeah, it's an 100% independent news site supported by a combination of advertising and reader supporters covering bicycling news in Seattle and the surrounding region. It's my full-time job, which is a pretty sweet gig.
What are the goals of the blog?
So I consider myself an advocacy journalist. So basically, it's journalism about transportation, but with a lens that more and safer bicycling is a good thing. And so that's my bend.
Would you explain the new stationless bike share systems that have come to Seattle? How are they set up?
They're $1 to rent for a half hour, and you park them anywhere. And it's really that simple. They're trying to make it as easy to get access to as possible. The only catch is you have to have a smartphone, and you have to have a debit or credit card. But if you have both those things, then you just walk up to a bike, open the app, and take a picture of a little QR code on the back of the bike, and it just unlocks itself. And you bike to wherever you're going, and then you just park it on the sidewalk, out of the way of the path of movement, and you just lock the lock and walk away, and you're done.
Are there age limits on being able to ride?
So you have to be 18 to sign up, but if your parent signs you up, you can be 13. But they have to give you permission and accept liability, et cetera. So even 13-year-olds can use it with permission and if they have a phone.
How is the new bike share system different from Pronto, the bike share that shut down last March?
It is, turns out, extremely different. Pronto had these set stations, you know, about 50 of them, in the downtown core, a little bit of Capitol Hill, a little bit of Eastlake, South Lake Union, and the U District. And you had to rent a bike from one station, and you had to return it at another. Also, the minimum price point to get in was $8 for unlimited 30-minute rides for 24 hours. But the problem was it didn't go enough places, and so now many people found it worth $8 to use. And a lot of people had trouble, you know, it's like, well, I can't use it if you don't have a station where I'm going. And so it just didn't get the ridership that it needed to, and you know, the city had to close it down.
Would you say just a few words about the two different companies that are currently operating in Seattle?
Right now, there's a company called Spin. They have the orange bikes. And there's a company called Lime Bike. They have the green and yellow bikes. And the bikes are pretty different, but at the moment, the size of the system and the price are very similar. Both have 1,000 bikes each, and they both cost $1 to use for 30 minutes. And so if you know how to use one, you know how to use the other. But you do have to download two different apps.
What is the relation of the new bike share to the city of Seattle?
That's one of the really interesting things about these new systems is that they don't cost the city a dime. And in fact, they pay permit fees to the city for the privilege of operating because the city owns the sidewalks where they're going to be parked. So they have to pay a fee just like if you're putting an advertising sign out on the sidewalk. It's kind of the same thing. So this is actually making the city money instead of like Pronto, which costs the city money to run. So it's just kind of surprising because this is the first time that a system like this has happened in the U.S., so no one really saw it coming until it was here. And a lot of these companies are less than a year old. I mean, this is like a brand new concept, and they're expanding quickly. And it's really cool to see Seattle be welcoming as a place for these companies to innovate. And that's exactly what they're doing. And people who are trying to get around the city are reaping the benefits of that because now we have 2,000 $1 bicycles on the streets, and it's about to go to 4,000 and on from there.
Why do you think the companies chose Seattle as one of the first places to set up operations?
In part because Pronto died. And here we have this big major market that does not have a bike share system, which is pretty rare in the United States at this point. So we're sort of open, which is a nice fallout from pronto closing, which I was very sad about it when it happened. And now I'm very happy it happened because it worked out really well for us. But I mean, a lot of that's just luck. And the city also was receptive to the concept of them. And instead of saying, no, we don't like this, or, oh, we want to wait to see what happens somewhere else, the city said, well, let's see if we can write up some rules that makes this a good thing for our city. And they did that, and they discovered, actually, this is going to be a great thing for the city because now we have this really convenient and easy to use and affordable alternative to driving, which is, you know, what we really desperately need in this town.
What are the rules required by the city for the bike share?
Well, there's a bunch of complicated business rules in the background, but for people using the system, basically you can park your bike share bike in what they call the landscape zone of a sidewalk. So that's the space where the trees might be or where the, you know, newspaper boxes are or bike racks. So if it's out of the way, it's not in a loading zone, it's not in a bus zone, you can park it in the sidewalk area and lock it. But you don't want to put it in the middle of where people are walking. You don't want to block doors or driveways, et cetera. And you can also park them at any bike rack. So if you see a bike corral in the street, you can park your bike share there. That's fine. And if you ever come across a bike that's poorly parked, you know, you can do everyone a favor and just move it out of the way. Like only the back wheel is locked. So you can pick it up and move it a couple feet to where it should be. Or if you see one tipped over, you know, pick it up. It would just be nice because it makes it look nicer for everyone. And there's always going to be some people who don't follow the rules or some people who are just vandals and they're just pushing over bikes. And, you know, it's nice for everyone if they're standing up. It looks better.
What are the rules about the number of bikes the companies can put out?
So the first month, companies were only allowed to have 500 bikes each. And starting August 7th, they were allowed to go up to 1,000 each. And then the schedule is that September 7th, they'll be able to go up to 2,000 each. And then October 7th, just the cap is lifted. And that's when this is going to get really interesting because nobody has any clue how many bikes make sense for Seattle. Like, at what point does adding more bikes not increase ridership? We don't know what that number is. We will only know once it happens. So the business model of these companies is the more bikes they add, the more rides per bike they get, because as they add more bikes, it becomes more convenient for more people's trips more often, and people start to get in the habit of using it. It's not just a fun thing you do on the weekend. It becomes the most convenient way to get around town. And as we know, people will pretty much always choose whatever's the most convenient way to get anywhere. And the bike share companies are aiming for that to be them. And the way to do that is to have enough bikes that happens, that you can depend on one being nearby. So I have no idea what the number will end up being. Spin has said they would like to get to 10,000 bikes in just the city of Seattle, which sounds like a lot to me, but sounds pretty awesome. And there are multiple companies in play, and there's more multiple companies who are in the permit process who want to start. So we could soon have 4 companies, for example, operating, and they could all have 1,000 bikes at this point, 2,000 bikes starting in September, and unlimited more or less starting in October. So this is all just getting started. Like, the number of bikes out there, this is just a taste of what's to come. And it's really exciting. And there's so many unanswered questions about how it's going to work out. But I'm very excited to cover it.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Tom Fucoloro, founder and editor of the Seattle Bike Blog. Our topic is Seattle's new stationless bike share and the current status and future of bicycle infrastructure in Seattle. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. How successful are the two bike share companies that have been operating in Seattle so far?
So far, it's honestly been more successful than I was expecting. Compared to Pronto, in 1 week of both companies operating, so that means we had 1,000 bikes total between the two companies, ridership was somewhere around quadruple the best week that Pronto ever had in its 2.5 years of life, which is just mind-boggling. I expected it to do better, but quadruple, that's ridiculous.
So how many rides is that?
Quadruple would be somewhere around 16,000 rides. The companies haven't given me exact numbers. I had to tease that out of them a little bit. But in 1 week, that's a lot. And again, they're just getting started. So we already have double the number of bikes on the streets now that we did that week. So these numbers are all going to fluctuate a lot. And these companies hope it's just going to keep going up, 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 up. and I do too.
Which neighborhoods are using the new bike share the most? What is the geographical usage pattern?
What's really interesting is that they've gone to every corner of the city. You can actually, if you download, especially the Spin app works really well for this, you can kind of scroll around and bikes will pop up as you scroll. So on the app, it'll show you where all the bikes are in case you want to go find one. But you can also just look at where did these bikes get to. And if you pull it up, it's basically the whole city, except for the tops of the hills. You can pretty much identify where the peaks of all of our city's hills are by where the bikes are not, which makes sense. So people are honestly riding them everywhere, but the absolute most use is where the bikes are most closely together. And they're most densely collected in downtown and then along our really bike-friendly bike lanes and trails like the Westlake Bikeway between South Lake Union and the Fremont Bridge or the Fremont neighborhood and then along the Burke-Kilman Trail to Ballard to Wallingford to the U District. I mean, those are like the really high use areas, which makes sense because they're the most safe and comfortable places to bike. So it's the most inviting for people to use. But they really have gone everywhere. Also, it's just fascinating to see. I didn't know how long it would take for someone to bike one of these to Lake City. And the answer was like 3 hours from dropping them. They're clustered around the Columbia City and Rainier Beach light rail stations. And oh, the Othello station has a ton of use, which makes sense because you have these light rail stations that are an awkward walk from the business districts. And bike share is just the perfect way to just get from the station to the business you're going to really quickly. And it's only a dollar. And it's kind of makes a lot of sense in Rainier Valley. And so you're already seeing people use it that way, which has been really fun to see.
So the companies don't have any limits on where you can take the bicycles.
Seattle city limits at the moment because they have a permit deal specifically with the city of Seattle Department of Transportation. So technically, parks are kind of a gray area because parks are usually lined by streets where you can park them. But whether or not you should be able to park them in a park, so far the Parks Department has been cool about it. But technically, I don't think they have a permit with parks yet, but I know that's in the works. Other public plazas that are owned by King County, for example, they don't necessarily have a permit yet, but so far King County has been pretty cool about it, and I know that they're in talks also. So hopefully those kind of things will get worked out because people don't know what property is King County and what property is Seattle. Like, it's public space, and so you leave it there. But yeah, so technically Seattle, but we've seen them in... They've gone to Bothell and Kenmore. They've gone to Bainbridge. They've gone to Kirkland, Medina. They've gone on ferries. They've been all over, which is pretty fun to see.
What is your personal experience using the new bike share systems?
It's gone really well from my perspective. You know, every once in a while, there are bugs, but these are very young companies and this technology is all very new. And of course, there are bugs in it. Sometimes you'll see a bike on the map on your phone. And you'll walk to that location. It won't actually be there. Sometimes that's either that there's a bug in their system, but sometimes it's somebody took the bike into their apartment or something. That can be frustrating if there aren't any more bikes nearby, but that's kind of the point of them trying to roll out more bikes is if there ever is one that's not there, there should be another one nearby. And so that should become less and less of an issue. But as of right now, that's one thing you might encounter. Taller people might be uncomfortable on the Lime bikes. Right now, their seats just don't go quite high enough. So once you get beyond maybe 6 feet, the seat will be lower than you want it to be. That's something to look out for. Spin seats go a little higher. Lime Bike says that they're going to work on that, and they're going to have taller seats soon, but that's one issue. And Spin bikes sometimes have, they're changing this right now, but they launched with the lowest gear wasn't really quite low enough to get up some of our steeper hills, like to climb up Capitol Hill. You had to like stand up and really power it. Through it, where Lime Bike has very low gears, it's very comfortable, but Spin is rolling out changes to that too. That's another cool thing to see about these companies is that they're responding to feedback immediately. So when someone says your gears are way too high, they say, all right, well, when we launch our next 500 bikes, they'll all have lower gears and we're going to go back and fix the old ones. So it's really neat to see immediate response to that kind of feedback. And then they take immediate action because they want this to work. And if it doesn't work, they're going to fix it. And that's been really cool to see.
What concerns have community members expressed about the new Seattle bike share systems? There are going to be a lot of bikes around.
Yeah. I've been shocked by how little complaining I've heard about it. Every once in a while, you will hear people who are, they come across a bike that's been left in the middle of the sidewalk. And that's extremely frustrating, which I agree, that is frustrating. That's a rude thing to do. And it was either someone parked it irresponsibly or it could be a vandal. You know, it's impossible to know. So I get that people are a little annoyed when that happens. But probably the most common complaint I've heard is from people who bike, who are upset that people are putting them at bike racks, places where they're trying to lock up their personal bike. And they're like, well, why are people putting these at bike racks when they can just be locked away from the bike rack? And that's kind of the biggest complaints I've heard about the bike share from people who bike. Everyone else, I think, because Seattle's had Car2Go, we've sort of understood this idea of a shared vehicle being in a place where you used to be able to put something privately owned. So when Car2Go launched, I remember there was people who were mad because one was outside of their house for a couple of days in a row, and they got annoyed that it was taking up the space in front of their house. So I think it's kind of a similar issue to that, where people got to adjust to it a little bit. But I think having Car2Go for so long here already, people are used to the concept. So it's not as shocking as maybe it would be in some other cities that where they don't have that.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Tom Vucaloro, founder and editor of the Seattle Bike Blog. Our topic is Seattle's new stationless bike share and the current status and future of bicycle infrastructure in Seattle. Spin and Lime Bike are not providing helmets as Pronto did. What are the issues surrounding the helmet law?
So King County has a very rare all-ages helmet law. Just very few places in the whole world have such a law. It's more common to have a helmet law for minors or people under 16, but to have a helmet law for adults, honestly, it's pretty weird. And it does complicate the idea of bike share, which is supposed to be spontaneous. A lot of these trips are supposed to happen that you are beginning to walk. You have a 20-minute walk ahead of you, and you see a bike share on the sidewalk. You're like, oh, I could just bike, and it would be 5 minutes. And so then you take the bike. But in that scenario, you didn't like bring a helmet with you. But yet, this is a good thing for Seattle if more people are biking. So it's complicated because it has to be spontaneous. The companies can't keep helmets on these bikes because that would be disgusting. I would definitely not put on some random helmet that's been sitting on some bike on the sidewalk. I would not put that on my head. So the companies are telling people that it's the law to wear a helmet and you have to BYO. And if you choose not to, you risk a ticket. But the police usually don't prioritize helmets. I mean, they have way more important things to focus their time and energy on, but you could get a ticket. And it's a $30 ticket. And if you get one, you can go get a receipt proving that you bought a helmet and take that to the judge and they'll throw your ticket out. So if you get one, you can do that, I guess. But ultimately, they should probably repeal the helmet law in King County because it has not been shown to be a best practice. You know, all the safest cities in the world for cycling do not have helmet laws and people rarely wear helmets. It's way better to focus our efforts on things like safe bike lanes that prevent collisions and prevent the need to have a helmet in the first place, rather than focusing on this thing that might help you once kind of the worst thing has already happened. Someone's been hit by a car or something. So that's the status of helmets. I hope it's not an issue, but it is kind of awkward legally.
Would you say more about the implications of the new bike shares for transportation in Seattle?
So if these companies succeed basically the way that they're planning to succeed, then that means Seattle's about to have basically a transportation revolution around cycling. The number of trips that they think they can get once they become the most convenient way to get around is just enormous compared to what we have right now. And that has huge implications for traffic, for air quality, for carbon emissions, for public health, and also just for the way that people view their city. Right now, you have to own a bike. You have to be able to get that bike to wherever it is downtown. And if you don't live near downtown, that means transporting it on a bus or biking a really long distance. So a lot of people, when they see a downtown bike lane go in, they just don't understand why are we building bike lanes downtown, because they can't identify with the idea that they would ever use it. But once there's a bike on the sidewalk that as you're walking by, you can pay a dollar and you can ride in that bike lane and suddenly it becomes really convenient to you, it might all make a lot more sense. So that's what I'm hoping happens from this, and I hope they succeed. But the number of trips that they're talking about is, I mean, it's many times the number of trips that we have right now. And this has happened in other cities around the world, so it could happen here. But again, we're testing this. This is something that Seattle's trying to innovate and experiment with. And what's interesting is the whole country is watching because they want to know if this is going to work here, because this could have huge implications. It could have huge implications, for example, for Lyft and Uber, because a lot of their trips are within the 2 to 3 mile range, which is within a 20-minute bike ride. So part of why Lyft and Uber are used so much is because they just made it so easy to use, but it's expensive. These companies are trying to get the same trips, but make it so easy to use, and it's a dollar. And I think they can do it. I think they can take a big chunk of those rides and turn them into bike rides. And that's great for traffic and just the enjoyment of spaces that right now are sometimes clogged at all hours. And instead, you can bike around instead of contributing to the problem.
How will the new bike share affect equity?
That's a huge question, because in some ways, compared to the old bike share, it's already way better. The $1 price tag is huge. There's an issue with, some people still don't have access to, not only just a smartphone, but a smartphone with a data plan, which can be expensive, or they're paying by the megabyte or whatever for data, which is also really expensive. And some people don't have bank accounts. They have debit cards and credit cards. And you need a debit card, credit card, and a smartphone with a data plan, basically, to use the system. So there are barriers there for people who are very low income, but smartphone use has become so widespread in Seattle that that's less of a barrier than it was even 5 years ago, which is cool to see. And by making it a dollar, it suddenly becomes much more accessible to way more people to use. And by not having stations, people can bike them wherever they want to. And that means if they live in a place where Pronto was just, it was going to take forever for Pronto stations to get to Rainier Beach, for example, but we already have these bikes in Rainier Beach because people took them there, which is really great. So the next question is, will these companies actively serve and rebalance and make sure that bikes are always at Rainier Beach, or will they just leave it up to the people? If the companies actually serve the area purposefully, they could get a lot more ridership there, but that's yet to be seen. And, part of it being a private company is that they get to chase profits. They're going to go after the denser areas before they go after further out areas, unless they make it a specific priority not to. So my job on the blog is to cheerlead their success and then also push them to make that a priority, even if it's not in their, necessarily bottom line interest, that's important to the city, that's what happens. And so they actually have tons of ideas. These companies both do. Currently they're just trying to stay afloat and fix bugs and stuff. So they're kind of not to the point where they're really strategically placing bikes around. So if you see a bike, it was probably just biked there by somebody. But they have some really cool ideas for how to improve access, come up with ways for people to access them without smartphones or access them using text messages so you don't need a data plan. Things like that that are not yet working, but they have ideas for them. There are cool ideas for partnering with high schools, which I think could be really neat, because Seattle has this funny pattern where people bike to school kind of a lot when they're in elementary school, and then it comes down a little bit in middle school, and then our high school bike to school rates are just kind of dismal. So we're losing students along the pipeline for biking to school, and this could be a really interesting way to win them back, and that could be really great for students.
To what extent is Seattle's new bike share likely to influence whether new bicycle infrastructure is built and how quickly?
I hope that it is a shot in the arm to the city to build out what we have planned as quickly as possible and to really speed up some of our implementation plans for especially downtown bike lanes, and for there's some key connections between neighborhood bike routes and downtown that are going to be difficult, but are so drastically needed. A bike connection from downtown to the International District and over to the I-90 bike trail and bike routes, which connects to bike routes to Rainier Valley and Mount Baker. And that is this missing link that right now is kind of stressful for people and confusing. It's really easy to get lost. You come in on a trail that's really nice, and then you're dumped off into the International District, and it's not really clear where you're supposed to bike if you're trying to get to downtown. And so if there was a bikeway, I think a lot more people would use it if it was just clear and protected. But so projects like that, I think, need to be sped up, because now we have this potential user base that's so much wider than before. You know, one cool thing about these companies is that they give the city cover, that when they build a bike lane, these bike share companies are providing a user base to fill the bike lanes. So the faster they can build bike lanes, the quicker they will just be filled with people using them. Where before, you had to depend on people owning their own bike. And a lot of people do that, but it's way easier to get very quick adoption of something if it's just sitting on the sidewalk and you pay a dollar for it.
Where else in the U.S. and also internationally have stationless bike shares been set up?
We're basically importing this model from some major cities in Asia. Some of the biggest companies of this model are like Mobike and Ofo, which are both based in China. And one of them, Ofo, is actually intending to come here and start opening up. And these companies have millions of bikes. Ofo said that they've had 2 billion rides on their bicycles, billion with a B. And there are cities that have just tens of thousands of these bicycles by many different companies all over, to the point where it becomes a problem once you have too many, which is something that the city has their eye on here, because we've seen that happen in cities overseas, and you don't want them piling up or whatever. And so that's something the city is going to be watching here, because we don't want to repeat that mistake, because that's bad press and everything. But also, once you get to saturation, the use just explodes. Cities have seen vehicle miles travel decline, because half of trips are less than 3 miles in distance in the U.S. But yet a lot of those 3 mile trips are being taken by car when they don't need to be. Some of them do, you know, if you're carrying something heavier, if you need a car to get around for mobility purposes. But a lot of them, it's just because the car is the easiest option. And so once the bike becomes the easiest option, people adopt in huge numbers, and that's starts to add up quickly. So that's cool. But what's interesting is we don't know how that model is going to work here, because American cities are very different. We're less dense. We have different rules about how companies like this can operate and how our streets work. And we don't have a long history of having a bicycle culture the way a lot of cities where it's really taken off had. So in some ways, there's cities that are reclaiming a previous bicycle culture, and we're inventing a new one. And so it's going to be harder here, probably, but it's very exciting.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I say give it a shot. Download the app and try it. You know, Lime Bike and Spin. You know, they're Apple, iOS, and Android. And yeah, go find a bike and take it for a ride. And if you haven't ridden a bike in Seattle in a long time or ever, you might be surprised how fun it is, how much easier it is than it looks. You know, we have big hills, but there's often ways to get around them. And really, once you go up a hill, it can be kind of hard, but you're rewarded with beautiful view. We have an absolutely stunningly beautiful city, and it's a crime to spend it all behind a windshield. Once you're out in it, it's just, for lack of a better term, life-changing.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Tom.
Thank you for having me.
You were just listening to Tom Fucoloro, founder and editor of the Seattle Bike Blog. For more information, check on the web at seattlebikeblog.com. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM by mobile app and on kexp.org.